Thanks for joining us at Cults to Consciousness. This storytelling podcast is meant to be for entertainment purposes only and does not substitute for any medical advice. We may discuss triggering topics, and we ask that you make your personal mental health a priority. Lastly, the opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the host.
I felt so powerful and amazing when I would step on the stage, like something came alive inside of me. Even though I was super shy, I was like the most shyest little girl growing up Amish. And even after I left, I was still very, very shy. Once I did smoke crack, I stopped going to work. I stopped going to college, and that became my life. I knew it was wrong. I didn't want to do it, but it had such a hold of me. Like, and that was really the beginning of the end of me as I knew myself. Growing up Amish, I didn't have more than an eighth grade education, so I may have definitely gone a different route if I had more education.
Hey, my name is Shalise Ansola, and this is Cults to Consciousness, where we discuss leaving high-demand religions or organizations and finding healing and independence through awareness and true individual sovereignty. If you're only listening and you want to see our faces and maybe some sexy pictures that we're going to put up on the screen, you can go to our YouTube channel at Cults to Consciousness, where you can join in on the conversation, leave those empowering words of encouragement for our guests who are coming on and sharing their story. This channel would not exist without them. We would also love it if you could subscribe and like. It helps boost the algorithm so we can expose more of these cults. So today's guest, she reached out to us through our guest application form. I was very happy to hear from her. She grew up in the Schwarzentruber Amish, and it's one of the most strict Amish sects out there. We're going to talk all about the rules and what that means. And then she ended up becoming a stripper. And so she has a book. It's called The Amazing Adventures of an Amish Stripper, an Erotic Memoir. And my goodness, guys, if you thought 50 Shades of Grey was spicy, that book has nothing on her book. I was totally blushing. I read the whole thing in one sitting last night, and it was so great. So I'm just going to bring her on now. Thank you so much for joining us, Naomi Schwarzentruber.
Hi, it's nice to be here, and here's my book, The Amazing Adventures of an Amish Stripper.
Yes, look at that cover. So, wow, there was so much in there. I mean, all of the stories that you shared from being raised Amish and then everything that you went through after that, it was astounding, all the different experiences. And so today we really want to just dive into kind of the psychological part of that. So telling your story, understanding why maybe from this new perspective you made the decisions that you made in your life and how you ultimately ended up in a very, very happy, healthy place and embodying who you are now, fully embodying your sexuality and with a partner. And I'm going to give away the ending, so stop there. But there's just so much to discuss. And so I'm really excited to get into this with you. Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be here. I'm very excited. And it's definitely been an adventure, to say the least.
Yeah. And I mean, you also have huge following on your Instagram and TikTok. It's telling your story. So if anyone wants to go check that out, it's at Amish Inspiration. We'll put all the links in the description below. So everyone is very interested in your story, clearly. So let's just dive into it. Let's start with how you were raised. If you could, just give those who aren't familiar a brief overview of the very specific, we had disclaimer, not all Amish groups are the same. So give a description of the Amish community that you were a part of and kind of the rules and things.
So I grew up Schwarzentruber Amish, which is one of the strictest Amish sects. And we have very, very strict rules. We have to wear long dresses down to our ankles, and we have to wear a cap. I call it a bonnet now, but it's a cap in Amish, and it has to cover our hair. Our hair is braided, or at a certain age, at 10, we put it up in a bun. Super strict. We can't have a lot of games and things, like a lot of toys, but we can have certain games. And we start working at a very young age. Like, I was 4 or 5. I had to fill the wood box, feed the chickens. I had to set the table, get up at 5 in the morning while my parents went to milk the cows. I had to set the table, pack school lunches. There was not a lot of time to play, but I had a very happy childhood. At 6, I started going to school. At first grade, they don't go to kindergarten or anything like that, or preschool. And then I was out of school at 8th grade because that's when we stop school and we go to work on the farm, or we become a mod, or called a mate, in English. Definitely a very different lifestyle than the English because it's so strict. We have to abide by very, very strict rules that the bishop and the elders have had for a long, long time.
Yeah, and one of the main things too is the no electricity or indoor plumbing. So you had to do everything by hand, use an outhouse. Was there anything else that made your life particularly difficult or just busy, as you had mentioned, because it sounds like you enjoyed all of the things that you were doing. What did bath time look like, for example?
When I was young, we only took a bath on Saturday nights. And except in the summer, sometimes when it was really hot, we would take a bath on Wednesdays as well. We had running cold water, but no running hot water. So we had a cast iron kettle. It was a big cast iron kettle, and underneath you could build a wood fire. So we would build a wood fire and we would put a hose in the kettle and fill it with water to heat to take a bath. And then a couple kids would take a bath, and then we had to empty the bathtub and refill it until everybody had a bath, and there was 12 kids in my family, and then my mom and dad would always take a bath last.
Yeah, 12 kids, and you were number four, right?
Yes, I was number four. And then we milked the cows by hand. Like, we didn't have those milkers, but I loved milking cows. When I was 8, I started helping to milk the cows, and we did that twice a day. And we made all of our own clothes. We gardened, we grew most of all of our food, canned it and preserved it for the winter, so when it was cold and we had food all year round. And in the winter we would do the meat, we would can our meat, we would butcher the pigs and the cows, and we would can it. That way we had meat all year round as well. So it was a lot of work.
Yeah, that is a lot of work. What did you do to keep things fresh if you didn't have a fridge?
That's interesting. Great question. So back then when I was there, we had a milk house because And a lot of the Amish back then had a milk house because we milked cows too, and we would sell the milk. That's what we did. In the milk house, there was concrete tanks went down in the ground, and we had a big 15,000 gallon water tank on top of the milk house that was insulated. And we pumped the water from a well with a Honda engine into this big tank, and it would stay cool. And then during chore time, we would run it through another little tank that was on top. And just on the milk house floor. And so how we kept our food fresh, like milk or fresh fruits and vegetables, we would put it in glass jars and we would put it in this little tank, concrete tank that had water, cool water. And the milk house would always stay cold or cooler, even in the summer, because of how it was insulated. But now a lot of the Amish have ice houses. What they do in the spring, they go out on the lakes and they cut big chunks of ice, and it's called ice harvesting. And they store it in an ice house. And then throughout the summer, they take a block of ice and put it in an ice chest. And that's how they keep their food fresh for a few days now. But back when I was there, those did not exist. But almost all of them have those now. I mean, obviously, we couldn't keep things for a long time, and especially in the summer, we just could keep it for a couple of days and then it would go bad if we didn't eat it. And in the winter, we often put meat in 5 gallon buckets or ice cream pails, and we would put it outside to freeze. That way, we had fresh meat to eat for a while as well.
Okay, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
So, what are some of the standout things that you can remember being Amish? You have good memories. Are there any bad memories? Like, any memories that you want to share about your time there?
I don't know that there's really bad memories. I mean, there were a lot of times often when I didn't understand why we couldn't do certain things, like why I could only go to town once a year in the summer, but that's just how it was. Or like why we have to wear the short dresses and be so covered. I didn't like that. I wanted to be, when I was little, I was fine, but when I got a little bit older, I didn't understand what my parents would say. That's just our way, or it's not our way to do different, to be different than that.
Yeah, actually, let's talk about the exposure thing. So, if you only went to town once a year, you were kind of insulated in this community. I think you had mentioned in your book that you had a neighbor move in, an English neighbor, and that's when you really started to become exposed to the outside world and started to realize that you were different. So, up until that point, were you just super happy to be Amish and you didn't just because you didn't know that there was a different way?
For the most part, but actually, I'll back up a little bit. When I was like 4 or 5, we had English neighbors that lived across, right across the road, and they had two little girls, and they would ride their horses, and they would bring them over, and I loved horses, and of course, we had horses, but we were not allowed to ride them because it was too prideful. So that was really, really difficult for me as a little girl because I really wanted to ride their horses, but my mom and dad would just say it's not our way. So that was like my first experience of that I remember where I didn't understand. It seemed so simple, but yet I wasn't allowed to do it. It felt so painful at that time. And then when I was 13 and we got the new neighbors, they lived like a couple miles away. They had an 11-year-old daughter and she started coming over a lot. My parents weren't happy about it, but they allowed it. And she was just as fascinated by us as we were by her. And that really opened my eyes into the outside world. And you ask, yes, before that, I was pretty content being Amish because that's all I knew because I only got to go to town once a summer and I wasn't exposed to the outside world very much at all until then. So I became rebellious, and I started wanting a bicycle, a phone, TV, music. But I never really, at that time, I didn't really plan on actually getting those things because I thought I would go to hell if I would do that. Because I was taught if we do these things, we go to hell. Even thinking about it, I was worried that I would go to hell because I wanted them so badly. I was always worried, am I going to go to hell because I want these things? But now I know that it's not like that. So.
And these are simple things too. We're not talking about major grievous sins like murder or stealing or anything like that. You're being told that you could go to hell for wearing nail polish or for wearing pants.
Yes, or letting my hair down. Like we can't wear shorts, we can't expose our body. So those are all sins. Like that we were told those were all sins. So we can't expose our bodies and we have to cover our hair. And even when I started questioning those things, my parents said that's just the way it is. That's just, or it's not our way.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that because I think it does directly tie into your future story. So let's talk about, from your perspective, the way that they approached purity culture and why everything had to be a certain way, as far as you can't have your hair down because it's considered too sexy, or what are the rules or the reasons that they gave you for these really strict modesty rules?
I don't know really exactly, but I know it's like considered shameful to cut the hair. I'm not sure why we have to cover it. Like there's so much I don't even know, even though I grew up like that. We just had to be covered. Otherwise it was a sin. Like it wasn't God's way if we didn't cover our bodies and if we showed our hair. Like it was a sin to show our hair.
It seems like, from what I've learned from previous interviews and also your book, that they really hypersexualize the female body, but they don't give any context around sexuality. So you know that you're not supposed to cover or you're not supposed to show yourself because you don't want to tempt a man, but you also don't get any sort of sex education as to what that would actually mean if you were tempted, or what sex is, or what your reproductive system's like. So, do you remember trying to navigate those feelings, or like, what are they talking about, sex, or anything like that?
Absolutely. Like they didn't talk to us about any of that stuff, really. And it was very confusing sometimes. Like when there was another baby, we would ask, where did the baby come from? And my parents would say, oh, God blessed us with another baby, or the stork dropped it from the sky. And it was strange to me that God would just bring us another baby. I didn't understand. But eventually I figured out that my mom would get a big belly and then there was another baby. I still didn't know like how she was making the baby or why it was in her belly. It was very confusing. And then eventually I figured it out. I don't remember how old I was when I figured out about sex and stuff, but I just eventually figured it out. And it was so confusing because it was something that I was interested in learning, but we couldn't talk about it. I had no one to turn to ask questions or talk about these things at all. So I just, it felt like it was bad. Because we couldn't talk about it.
Yeah, and I wanted to get your perspective within your own community because it seems like through other interviews, sexual abuse is fairly common in these Amish communities because of the repression, because there's no education. Did you see anything like that going on, or were you aware of anything like that going on in your community?
Actually, I was. My sister it happened to my sister, actually. And I don't really want to get into it too much because that's her story and not mine to tell. But before then, I was not aware of it. And it happened to her when she was a little over 16. So she actually had a baby when she was 17. Yeah. And that was really hard because even then, like, my parents didn't really talk to us about it. It was very hush hush because it was almost taboo because my sister got pregnant at 16 and a half and she got raped by her uncle. Actually, it was horrible. And she had a baby. And 9 days later, my mom had a little boy and my sister had a girl. So like, when my sister had her baby, I didn't even know she was pregnant until the morning when she went into labor. I was like, oh, maybe she's pregnant because of the way she's been acting. But the way she would put her dress would cover it up. So I couldn't really tell until I really thought about it. But we couldn't talk about it when we went to school. Like, we had to, the only thing we could say is that my mom had a baby. We told people, even though the elders knew it was my sister's baby, but when we went to school, we had to say it was my mom's baby. And then 9 days later, she had another baby. Like, that's so confusing.
Oh, so your mom was actually pregnant and your sister was pregnant at the same time?
She was, yes. And then once my sister ended up getting married, I don't remember how old she was, but that's when they told the little girl who her actual mom was. Until then, she believed that my mom was her mom, and that always broke my heart because it wasn't fair to her. But she's okay. She's married and has her first child, just had her first child last year. So,
oh, wow. So was your sister able to gain custody as her mother once she got married?
Yeah, when she married, the little girl went to live with her and her new husband and her husband. Things were very different for her because after she had the baby, she could go to the singing, like the other kids do at 16 and a half, but she had to wear a white bonnet when she went to church instead of a black one. And she had to sit with the married ladies, even though she wasn't married, and she had to get baptized sooner than they normally do because this happened to her. And this happens actually quite a bit. Like, I have other cousins, but these were their boyfriends that they got pregnant by, not their uncle.
Okay. Yeah. What happened to your uncle? Was he punished in any way?
Oh, yeah. He got shunned for a really long time, and he ended up moving to Canada, and he got married there, and that's where he lives. But he got shunned through the church and punished. I know that's still not enough punishment, but I remember that he was shunned for a really long time.
Okay. Do you remember if your sister had to go through any shunning process?
I don't think so, because she wasn't baptized yet.
Oh, interesting.
I think the other things that were like punishments to her were having to sit with the married ladies and having to wear a white bonnet before she was married. So like, those were like things that I always felt were a punishment to her.
Yeah, it's more of the public shaming aspect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to get your opinion on if you thought it was something that happens because of the lack of sex education, because I know a lot of people say abuse happens everywhere. Of course, yes, it does. But I feel like it's more prevalent in communities such as this, where things are so extremely strict that there's no conversations, no education, no talk about boundaries, consent, what sex is, how to say no, all of that. So I wanted to get your opinion if you thought that there was a direct correlation between the amount of abuse and the lack of sex education.
I absolutely feel that there's a direct correlation because of the lack of education and talking about it, because we don't know. Nobody tells us these things. So mm-hmm. I definitely believe that, or there's more of it because of it.
So you had mentioned the singing, and I remember from your book, you talking about how you would go and it was something for the young adults, a way for them to get together and start this courtship process. Could you talk about the dating process and what it was like and the expecting to sleep over with someone who was courting you?
In the Swartz and Trooper Amish, every other week where they have church afterwards in the evening from 8 to 10, the kids that are 16 and a half and older that are not married gather at this house and they sing and have popcorn and sometimes lemonade. And if there's someone that you're interested in, another boy or a boy is interested in you, they can ask you to take you home. And for example, after I joined to singing, there was no one in my district that, or an Amish boy that I was interested in, but they do what's called a schnitzing, which is your first date. And everybody has to do that once they join to singing. Like, doesn't matter if you're interested in the boy or the girl or not, but you have to get schnitz. So one night after the singing, a couple guys grab me and they're like, who do you want to date? I was like, no one. They're like, oh, you know, you have to. And they grabbed me and I was like, I, no way. And I wrestled loose from them and I started to run, but I didn't get far. More boys grabbed me and they threw me in the buggy with my cousin. I'll just call him Daniel. That's his name in the book. He tried to make small talk on the way home because there, when you have a date, you go into the girl's bedroom in the bed and you spent the night together in bed and you're supposed to like kiss and cuddle, but I was not interested, so I didn't talk to him on the way home. My sister actually, I didn't have my own bedroom at the time. My sister, older than me, let me borrow her bed and her room when he came up, and I still was not really talking to him, and I just literally laid all the way to the wall the whole time, and I wouldn't let him touch me, and eventually he just gave up. He didn't even kiss me. He just was like, whatever, and he laid on the front, but I didn't sleep the whole night, and at like 4:30, he got up and left, and I was like, oh, I hope I never have to do this again.
Yikes. It just blows my mind. It makes no sense to me that there's so much emphasis put on modesty, and even the way you walk has to be a certain way. You can't draw the attention of a man. You can't show your hair, all this stuff. But then on a first date, they put you in bed together. It doesn't make any sense.
And expect you not to have sex. Like, I mean, I didn't want to anyway, but like, I'm sure sometimes it happens.
Of course. It's so wild to me. And also your cousin, which is...
I am.
So moving on with your story, you start to get a glimpse of the outside world. You're seeing your English neighbor. You start rebelling a little bit. You start going to... You start trying to find regular English clothes and hiding them. I think one of my favorite stories from your book was talking about going to the dollar store and buying your first thong. Oh. It was just so wholesome. I never thought I would say thong and wholesome in the same sentence, but can you tell that story?
Yes. So when I was like 15, I started going to yard sales and I wanted to have English clothing and I wanted to buy used panties, but my sister was like, oh, you don't know where those have been. She's like, we can get them next time we go to town. So when we went to town, we headed straight back to the panties and there were just racks everywhere with panties. Like, I never saw so many panties. I don't know. I never paid attention to them before, but there were thongs, there were like fishnets, and I was like holding them up and I'm like, what do these do? And the lady, like the clerk, I don't know, it must have been funny to her because there's the Amish girls are looking at thongs and panties. But I ended up getting some and it was very interesting. And I took them home and I tried them all on and my sisters were laughing and they thought it was interesting that I was wearing English panties, but I would wear them to church. And my cousins actually started getting, they got panties as well. So when we would go to church, we'd go in the outhouse together and we'd be like, oh, look at these ones. And we'd show each other our panties because, I don't know, we thought we were cool because weren't wearing Amish underwear. We had English panties.
And if you would describe what the Amish underwear were like so people understand the difference.
So Amish underwear, I used to call them bloomers. They're more like shorts. They're homemade. So they go almost all the way down to our knees. And until our period comes, we wear some that have like a belt all the way around the top and then two little buttons on the side. There's kind of like a little door. You open it so you can go to the bathroom. But they go all the way down to your knees. And then once we got our periods, because it was easier how we put the pads, we didn't have regular pads, I can talk about that, but they were more like shorts and they just had one slit on the side and we either closed them with a safety pin or we had one button. That way you could put them up and down versus just opening the back. Talking about a period, maybe it's too much, but
no, go for it.
So when I think I was 10, my mom pulled me aside and she said soon I would be getting my cluck. And I'm like, my cluck? And that's what they call a period. So she explains to me that I'll start bleeding soon and I'll have to wear these ripped up towels that she'll show me how to use them when it happens. And it sounded so horrible and discouraging and gross and awful. She's like, you'll have to wear shoes like your sisters. So the Amish, and I know they're all different, but in the summer we would always go barefoot. But I noticed that my sisters sometimes in the summer, and my mom, they would wear their shoes. And I'd be like, we'd always pick on them. Me and my brothers were like, why are they wearing their shoes? Like, and they couldn't do hard work. So my mom explained to me that the week that I have my period, I wouldn't be able to do any heavy lifting or gardening. I could milk cows, but not carry the milk. And I could cook and stuff, but no cleaning. And I had to wear my shoes to keep our feet warm during that time. It's basically to keep us safe during that time. But it sounded so discouraging. And then one Saturday night, it came. And I was like, oh, this is horrible. But I felt fine. And I told my mom, and she showed me how to. We didn't have pads back then, but now they actually use pads. At least my family does. I don't know about the other ones. But we had towels that we ripped into pieces about this long and wide, and we would roll them together and make them like a pad, and we would pin them with four safety pins. But it was awful because they hung so low. And especially back then, my periods were super heavy and I had horrible cramps. Like, it was not a fun time during that week.
Yeah, and still you could only shower once a week
Yeah, I've been
when you were
doing,
on your period.
yeah. And during when we were on a period, like we couldn't sit in the bathtub, like we could kneel and wash ourselves, but we couldn't like sit in the water.
Oh no, that's the best part is soaking when you're on your
I know, like I
period.
know, but I know it was so discouraging, but yeah.
Well, it sounds like you had a great mom who actually told you about menstrual cycles because I've spoken to other people who didn't even get that information and they thought that they were dying and something horribly wrong was happening. So I'm happy that she at least told you about that. But did she explain as far as you get this because of fertility or anything?
She didn't tell me why. She just told me that it was gonna come one day, probably when I was like 12 to 14, she said. But it could come sooner. And I was like, this is really horrible, but okay. But she didn't, like, yeah, she didn't say why it would come.
Yeah, so with all of this, the lack of conversation around sex, it seems extremely taboo, but kids talk and they figure things out. Do you remember how you actually figured out menstrual cycles are connected to fertility or baby making or even what a penis was and how that works?
The menstrual cycle and pregnancy connection, I did not figure out until way later after I left.
Oh.
Like a long time after I left, actually. I mean, obviously, I have little brothers, so I knew they had a penis and we had a didn't. But as far as like, I think my sisters and I, we started talking about it sometimes a little bit, but it was really weird to talk to them about it, but we did sometimes. And the pregnancy thing, because of my mom, when she would get pregnant, sometimes before she had the baby, we started talking about it and we'd get all excited because there was going to be a new baby. But we couldn't talk to mom and dad about it, but we were excited always.
You know, this it brings up something that I see in the comments sometimes, which is how do they not figure it out if they lived on a farm? I want to get your opinion because I remember speaking to Eli Yoder, he was saying that he was taught that animals are never to be compared to humans, and so he never realized that sex was the same throughout, you know, humans and animals. So, did you get any sort of context clues about how sex works because of the farm?
Yes, that's actually how I figured it out, I think, because we had dogs and cats, and sometimes they would have sex, and I'm like, oh, and then they had babies, like puppies and kitties, and I'm like, oh. And I remember actually talking to my sister, just older than me, and I was like, do you think that's how mom and dad have a baby?
I'm interested in the relationship that you had with your parents. It seemed from your book that it was very distant. Like there was a love there, a clear love there, but you weren't really allowed to express it toward each other. Could you explain what that was like for you?
Yeah, so when I was younger, I loved my parents and but they would never give us a hug or say I love you. But through other actions, I knew that they loved me and they cared for me. But there was never any like closeness or like close relationship talk. Like, I don't know, it just wasn't any closeness. And as a teenager, I really rebelled against them, towards them. I didn't want to be in the same room alone with them because I thought they were going to lecture me because my bonnet was back too far, my hair was showing too much, or my cape was far too far over my shoulders. Like I grew very distant from them once I started rebelling. So that was really kind of hard
Yeah.
as a teenager. Just, I don't know, it wasn't easy.
Was it a rule in the community? Because it seems pretty common that you're not really allowed to give physical affection to family members.
I don't know if it was a rule, but I just know that's just how it was. Like, nobody there was affectionate towards anyone. Like, I mean, sure, when like the kids, you hold them when they're little, but once they get to like a certain age, like people would tease the little kids if they, like, let's say they're like 4 or 5 and sitting on mom or dad's lap, like other people would tease them, oh, you're a baby still sitting on your mom or dad's
That
lap.
young.
Yeah, now I'm like, oh, I have a daughter and I can imagine not holding her or cuddling her and showing her love. Like, so there was definitely no closeness.
It sounds like you were forced to grow up a little bit early or a little soon because you said you would start doing chores or you were put to work when you were 5. So, did you feel like that's just kind of how it was? As a child, did you enjoy all of the responsibility? Or were you missing that connection with your parents?
I was definitely missing that connection with my parents, and I remember sometimes acting out to try to get their attention, but that didn't really work. I mean, we got negative attention at that point. So, like, if we acted out, it just is how it was. I remember wanting to play more sometimes. I felt like I was missing out on fun or playing because I had so many chores to do. But that's just how it was. I mean, all my brothers and sisters, we all had to do that. We all had to help each other out.
So let's talk
So.
about then when you did start rebelling and you started getting more of a taste of the outside world. It seemed like you wanted to do all these things simply because you wanted to rebel, not necessarily because, well, it seemed like that was a theme throughout your book, and I guess we'll get there when we get there. But it felt like a lot of times in your life you were doing things simply because you weren't allowed to do them versus you actually really wanted to do them. And I found that to be a theme throughout. But maybe that's not the case here because you're a teenager and of course you just want to experiment and do teenager things. So you start sneaking out with these English boys and you do have sex with them, which very hot and steamy, by the way. Again, the book, I was like, "Oh my goodness." Reading this book. So, what were those experiences like when you did kind of say, "Screw it, I'm just going to break all the rules?"
Was freeing and worrisome at the same time because once I got a little taste of freedom, I just wanted to kind of go wild. But at the same time, I felt like I was going to go to hell or that I was sinning. So I would worry about that and that would like rein me back in a little bit. But one Sunday in church, my cousin came up to me and she was like giggling. And I'm like, what did you do? And she's like, oh, I snuck out with the boys, the English boys. And I'm like, what? What did you do? And she just kind of giggled. And she's like, here's their number. You can call them and you can go do it too. So I was like, oh, this sounds really fun. But I never met these boys before. My mom and dad were going on vacation. And I was like, oh, here's my chance. So my cousin came over. I was so nervous. I was like, what are we gonna do? It was very nerve-wracking, but they picked us up. There were two guys and they were smoking cigarettes and had beer. So they offered us a cigarette and beer, and it made me super dizzy when I smoked the cigarette, but it was horrible. And we were driving around the country roads and they're like, what do you want to do? And we were like, I don't know. They pulled down this long driveway and it was February. It was snowy outside. And the one guy got out of the truck and he invited me to come with him. And like at that moment, I knew we were going to have sex. And he took his pants off and put him on the snow and asked me to lay on top of his pants. Now, I never, that was my first time. And I didn't know what to do, but I followed his lead. And yes, it was cold and I was wearing my underdress and my English panties. And he asked me to take him off and got on top of me, and it was over before I knew it. But I felt so happy and excited, but worried at the same time because what did I just do? I just had sex with an English boy.
So at this point, were you still very much, I don't know if indoctrinated is the right word, but were you still very into the doctrine of the Amish? Did you have a lot of guilt over what you had done, or were you at this point trying to separate yourself from these rules, from the theology about going to hell and everything?
I still had a lot of guilt, but I was trying to separate myself because I really wanted to leave, but I didn't want to go to hell. And finally, I was like, whatever, if I go to hell, I'll just go to hell. Like, it's something I'll have to deal with. And I started sneaking out more. And then one Sunday night, I got caught sneaking out. And I made a cherry pie for these English boys because we talk about baking sometimes when we hung out. And they were like, bring a pie. So I baked the extra cherry pie and I put it in the pantry, which was right next to my mom and dad's bedroom. And I left the window open so I could grab it when I snuck out. But my parents weren't sleeping yet. And when I grabbed the pie from the pantry window from the outside, I made a noise and my parents heard me. Just started running up the road. But before I knew it, they were calling my name. And I was like, oh no. And I threw the pie in the ditch. And I had to take some deep breaths because I was like, they're gonna think I was running away. And I walked back and they were sure that I was running away. And I was like, no, I just couldn't sleep. I was going for a run, which I often did actually on Saturday nights. I'd go running. I loved to run. And they didn't believe me. But after that, I was like, I am done sneaking out. Like, I am going to leave. I don't want to sneak the rest of my life to have fun. This is ridiculous. And that's what was like my final straw that made me decide that I really was leaving. I didn't know when or how or where I was going at that point, but I knew I had to leave.
So let's talk about the guy that came into your life and how that eventually panned out.
My dad had a big farm and a sawmill, and these two guys would deliver logs to the farm, so for the sawmill. And one morning I was picking strawberries by myself, and the guy came to buy strawberries. And I was like, oh, it was like a light bulb went off in my head. And I just blurted it out. I was like, I want to run away and I'm going to live with you. And I was like, can I please? And he was like, no, you're crazy. Absolutely no. And I was like, I might be crazy, but I really want to run away. Like, I really need a place. Like, please help me. And he thought about it and he was like, I'll be back to tell you. But that morning, he all of a sudden started getting flirtatious with me, and he looked around and there was no one else in the garden, and my brothers were out in the field working, and my sisters were in the house. So he's like, come on, follow me to the barn. And he leads me into an empty horse stall, and he made me give him a blowjob right there in the barn. And I was like, oh my God, what did I just do? Like, I couldn't believe what I just did. But I knew what was happening because when I snuck out and I would go to these English boys' houses sometimes, I would watch porn with them. But I had never given a blowjob before, but I saw it and I was like, oh.
So you knew what it was.
Yeah, I knew what was happening and what it was, but it freaked me out at the moment when it happened. But I felt naughty at the same time. I did not leave because I wanted to be with him. I left because I wanted to escape. So a week later, he comes back and he's like, you can stay with my mom if you take care of her, because she had dialysis 3 times a week. And that's a long story that's in the book, actually.
Yeah, it was intense. I was on the edge of my chair. What's gonna happen? Because you had told them, okay, meet me at midnight. And then your sister kind of caught on that you were running away. And so then you were late and you run. I'm summarizing, so it's way better in the book. But you get there 2 hours late and they're not there. And then you're like, do I have to stay the night outside? I can't go home. It was this whole thing until they finally found you, you connected with them, and you realize at that point that he had a wife too.
Yeah, I didn't know that he had a wife until the night when I was leaving, when they came. And meanwhile, we continued to like have a sexual relationship once in a while, me and this man, even though he had a wife. And like I said, I didn't leave to be with him. I just wanted to be out. But I felt powerless because I knew it was wrong. But I didn't know how to say no to him, and I felt horrible because here I'm cheating, we're cheating on his wife, and he was a truck driver, and I would go on the road with him. He'd always be home at night, but we fooled around while I went to work with him. It was a pretty horrible situation looking back. And also he like kind of pimped me to his neighbor, and I didn't know what prostitution was at that point. I just thought his friend was being nice and giving me $20 for a blowjob or when he tried to have sex with me. But he was definitely grooming me, and it was at the time I had no idea what was, because I wasn't educated about sex or anything like that.
Yeah, he absolutely took advantage of you. As I was reading the book, I was very angry at him. I was like, Kevin, no, this is not the way to do it. Because he saw you in a vulnerable position. He knew that you needed help. He knew that he was your only option. And then when it clicked of, oh, maybe I can use her as a sex toy, then he was all for it and he completely took advantage of you, knowing that you didn't have any other options or choices to get out of that situation. So the whole thing is just really upsetting, and I'm sorry that you had to go through that, especially as your first experience into the outside world.
Right. It was definitely difficult, and I felt so much guilt and anger at myself for so long about this because I've always felt like it was my fault. And obviously, a lot of it probably was because I could have walked away and been stronger and said no, but I didn't. But I
Well,
was
I don't
young and
know.
it was hard.
Yeah, you can't blame yourself. You were only 17, right?
Yeah, and he was 33.
Yeah, and we also have to remember the context of where you came from. I don't know if we had brought this up, but I know that in a lot of Amish communities, you're not even really getting affection from your parents. So I think, from my perspective, it seems like you're getting this love, affection, and attention, not realizing that it's grooming and that you're being taken advantage of. But for the first time, it probably feels good in some ways,
Absolutely.
really confusing. You have no sex education. You don't know about boundaries and consent. You don't know what prostitution is. And you also feel like you owe this person. So throughout your book, I noticed that we would find you in these situations where you didn't necessarily want to be doing all these things and being promiscuous in certain situations, but you felt like you owed somebody and that you couldn't say no and that you didn't have an option. And I think that this Kevin guy really set you up for that trajectory where that's your first experience in the outside world and he's telling you this is how it works. He's showing you this, he's setting up for you what reality is supposed to look like. And so from then on out, you just think, okay, well, this is how it works, is if I need somebody's help, I'm going to have to put out for them in some way. Would you feel like that's a fair assessment?
Absolutely. I absolutely feel like that played a huge role in how my life played out for many years because I always felt like I had to do things or like I owed people things or definitely.
Yeah. So then you find a boyfriend and you end up moving out of the state. And even this is kind of like a mess. It seems like every time you meet someone, it's really hopeful. And I'm like, okay, this is a good guy, and they're connecting. And now it's like a real boyfriend situation. But then it would end up going sour fairly quickly. And you're kind of back to square one of now, what do I do? I'm in this abusive relationship and I can't get out and I don't know where to turn. So, do you want to talk about that relationship at all and how that led you to eventually becoming a stripper?
Yeah, so my first boyfriend, it was so exciting. I was like, wow, it's so much better than the boys in the field or at the house where I watch porn or Kevin, the married guy. I was like, finally, I have someone that I'm allowed to love like fully and they love me. And it was so exciting. And he was so into me. And like, he actually moved to Michigan to be with me, but he worked with Kevin. So they'd be gone to Detroit all weekend. He'd come back Friday nights. And on the weekends, we just had such a nice time together. And then after we moved to Minnesota, like things changed. Like he started becoming distant and he wasn't like all about me. Like it was completely different. And yeah, I had other friends, which I was fine with. But I was suspicious that he was cheating on me because he was coming home late. He actually, one night when I was waiting for him by the door, he's like, here, are you happy? And he grabbed an engagement ring out of his pocket and proposed to me, but I felt like it wasn't real, like he was just trying to cover up. And I did find out later that he was cheating on me, but I had some really rough times with him. I was at a crossroads. I didn't know what I was going to do or where I was going to go. And I ended up going back to Michigan. And I was like, maybe I need to be Amish. Maybe my destiny is not to be English. Maybe Amish is my path after all. I felt really horrible because my parents were so excited to see me, but in my heart, I felt like I probably wouldn't be able to stay, but I wanted to give it a try. And after 10 days, I was like, oh, this is just not for me. And I left again. I went back, and that's when he actually told me, he's like, yeah, I have a new girlfriend and you'll have to go move out and get your own place. So I moved into my own apartment and the rent was $420 a month. About 6 months after we broke up, I would often call my girlfriend because I was so worried. And I knew this girl when she was Amish, but I didn't know her because she was quite a bit older than me. But we got really close. One night when we were talking, she's like, oh, there's lots of ways to make money. And I was like, what? What do you mean? She's like, oh, dancing. And I just got quiet and I'm like, what's? She's like, stripping. She's like, I used to be a stripper and I couldn't believe it. It blew my mind. One Friday night, she was like, we need to go out. You need to like clear your mind. And she's like, have a beer. We're gonna go have some fun tonight. She wouldn't tell me where we're going and we're driving and driving. Eventually she pulls into this parking lot that, and to me, it looked kind of like more like an old warehouse, but it was a strip club. And there was like a big pole sign with two silhouette women on the pole and it was spinning. And I was like, why did you bring me here? And she's like, oh, relax, you'll have fun. And we go inside and there's a naked girl on stage and she's looking at me. And I was like, oh no, why is she looking at me? But she was smiling and I decided just to relax. And then shortly after that, a man that looked like a manager, someone that he was in charge, she's like, I hear you need a job. And I was like, oh, absolutely no, I could never do this. And he's like, well, come to my office and we'll talk more. He's like, asked me where I was from and a few things. And it's like, we really love to have you. And I was like, there's no way I could never do this. And he's like, okay, I'll talk to you later. And he waved me away. And I go sit at the bar, and three girls come and start chatting. And they pull me to the dressing room and they strip off my clothes. And they all agreed on the hot pink bikini
Oh
and
my
they put it
gosh.
on me. And I'm like trying to wrestle. And my girlfriend's in there too, laughing and giggling the whole way. And they push me on stage. And I was like, oh my God. I am just on this stage. Like I just came here and now I'm on a stage in a hot pink bikini and my little tiny black heels I was wearing.
With an audience, right? This is like actual
Yes,
working
it's actual
hours.
working hours on a Friday night. And I was like,
Oh
you know
my
what? I'll
gosh.
just make the most of it. And I walked to the pole shaking and I grabbed the hold of it and I started trying to look sexy like I saw the girls doing. I don't know. And I took my top off after the first song was over because they one girl whispered in my ear, after the first song, you have to take your top off and then you have to be naked on the second song.
Oh my
And so I
gosh,
take my
that's so
top off during the
nerve-wracking.
first song and everyone screams. And I was like, oh, okay. And I just like hide my face behind my long blonde hair. And it made me feel like I was shielded. And then the second song comes on off and I took off my panties and trying to bling away my tears and trying not to freak out because I don't know. And I was thinking about my family and the Amish thing, like I'm definitely going to hell at this point. I remembered my friend whispering, she's like, just pretend you're having sex. So I was like down on the floor and everyone was screaming. And then I go on my back and I spread my legs and I look and I was like, oh my God, my vagina is naked. I'm naked. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. It was so insane. But I just hoped that the song would end soon, and it did. And I gathered my money and I stumbled off the stage and I counted the money afterwards and I had $55 and I was like, oh, that was kind of fun and kind of cool, actually. And the manager was like, asked me what I thought. And I was like, actually, I think I might want to work here after all. And I went back the next night and I danced for over 20 years, actually, altogether.
Wow, that's
So.
so wild. I mean, oh man, just being forced into that situation, but then also having this reclamation of yourself and your sexuality on stage and enjoying that empowerment, I'm sure.
It
And
was very empowering.
yeah, right. Could you describe that? Because, I mean, just the contrast of Amish to stripper, like, buck naked on stage, I can imagine there was that surge of ownership because no one is taking advantage of you. It's all under your own control. So what's going on in your mind, like with this push and pull? You talked about it a little bit, but I want to dive a little deeper into it.
It was very freeing because I would be able to express myself and I felt so powerful and amazing when I would step on the stage, like something came alive inside of me every time I stepped on the stage. Like, even though I was super shy, I was like the most shyest little girl growing up Amish, and even after I left, I was still very, very shy. But something would come alive inside of me, and I would feel so happy and so powerful when I would step on that stage. And often, even now, when the 4 years ago when I danced, I would still let my hair fall in front of my face because my hair always felt like my shield. For some reason, it was like my superpower. No one could see me. I know they could, but in my mind, they couldn't. It's my superpower. So, like, it was amazing. And so I danced 4 months in Minnesota and I moved to Grand Rapids. And at the club in Grand Rapids was very conservative. We had to wear nylons and it was only topless, not completely nude. But there, the girls were really good at doing pole tricks. And that fascinated me. It blew my mind. And I was like, oh, this looks really fun. I want to do that. So two of the best dancers, they kind of took me under their wings and they taught me how to do pole tricks. And once I learned how to do pole tricks, it was like a whole nother level of empowerment and like freedom of expression and amazingness once I started doing pole tricks. Like I actually miss doing pole tricks and dancing on stage. The lap dances I don't care for, but the pole dancing was amazing.
I don't know if anybody has tried pole out there, guys watching or ladies watching. It is hard. So I remember doing a pole class a couple times here in LA just for fun. I'm all like giggly, but of course I loved it. And I could not walk the next day. I had bruises everywhere. It was so difficult. So hats off for you doing all of these tricks and learning how to do that. It takes an incredible amount of athleticism to actually be able to pull it off.
It made me really strong doing it. Like I was always very athletic growing up on the farm. Like I love, like I said, I loved running. So I was always very athletic and that just like brought it out in me and it allowed me to, I don't know, it was another side of my life and of me that I didn't know that I had until I was a dancer. I mean, I knew that I was fit, but I didn't realize how good it felt to use those parts of me to like, and it was really amazing and freedom of expression and fun.
Yeah, definitely a lot of self-expression. I'm wondering if so we talked about this off camera a little bit, how because you only had an up to an eighth grade education, because the Amish have their own schools and their own way of doing things within the education system, do you feel like if you had more of an education, you would have never gone into stripping? Do you think that's something that was necessary for your empowerment journey within your sexuality? I'm wondering if you would have maybe gone a different route had you known you had other options.
I may have definitely gone a different route if I had more education and I was able to get a better paying job. Because I had the lack of education, I feel like that definitely played a big role in me going to be a dancer because my friend was like, there's other ways that you can make money, more money than just having a regular factory job. So that's why I went there. But I feel that, whether good or bad, I feel like it definitely helped me along my journey in my sexuality and becoming open-minded, and I lived a very different life because I was a dancer. Like I feel like my life would have been super boring probably if I wasn't a dancer. Like I know that might not make sense to some people, but it definitely opened my eyes and my mind to many things that I had no idea existed before I was a dancer.
Yeah, I'm seeing all these new perspectives and all these new experiences through your eyes as you go through your book and you talk about the first time you're with a woman, and it's like, well, we're here, why not? There were just so many why not moments, which were kind of exciting, and some of them I was like, no, don't do that why not moment. Which leads me to the next thing, which is you ended up with the wrong crowd who introduced you to drugs, and it was really a downward spiral, or you were trying to get out of it. It was this hole that you couldn't quite climb out of throughout the whole book. So, do you want to lead us through what that was like and how you got to that place?
Yeah, so I started going to college when I was 21. I was so excited because growing up Amish, I didn't have more than an eighth grade education. So after I left, people were like, oh, you should get your GED and go to college. And finally, I did that. And when I was 21, I started going to college. I was so proud of myself. And then I was single and I met this guy at the strip club where I was working. I just kind of started spiraling out of control. And first it was like on the weekends and sometimes on Wednesdays. And then eventually it got more to like every day. And one night there was no coke and our dealer had crack. And I didn't even know what that was. Like I had no idea, but I wanted to try it. If there's something new, I'm like, my friends are doing it. Why can't I do it? So I tried that, and that was really the beginning of the end of me as I knew myself, because once I did smoked crack, I stopped going to work, I stopped going to college, and that became my life. And I knew it was wrong. I didn't want to do it, but it had such a hold of me. Like I felt so helpless, like I couldn't crawl out of that hole, and it just kept getting bigger and deeper and deeper. And it just, like I called it, like the bottomless abyss or crack pit that I couldn't get out of for over 2 years. It was very difficult, and I lost everything. And I started selling myself to support myself. One of the guys that I was seeing, he offered to take me to Vegas, and I didn't have any money, but he's like, don't worry about it. He's like, I'll take you clothes shopping and feed you and get your plane ticket. And he took me there, and I was there for 2 weeks. And during that time, I felt so great. I was like, I'm never going to smoke crack again. I was so happy. I was like, it's finally over. And as soon as he was driving me to the airport, and I thought about my friends, I got that feeling in my stomach, that horrible craving. And that's when I realized I had to get away from those people if I ever wanted to stop smoking crack. I went back to Michigan, and before we went anywhere else, we went to the dealer's house to get more crack. It just started over, and he took me to Vegas 4 more times, and each time I knew I had to get away more than the time before. I met a guy in Vegas. He had just gotten out of prison for some stuff that he'd done. So we were both kind of down on our luck, and I was like, I want to move out here and be with you. And he's like, okay. And we moved in together. That's how I got away from crack. Now, that relationship with that guy was interesting. He was really nice to me at first and super into me, and I was super into him, but I made a mistake. Our relationship was never the same. I mean, I messed up. How could it have ever been the same? And then there were just so many temptations in Vegas, and I saw the other girls would have their clients outside the club, and they were making amazing money. And I started doing that, and I would lie to my boyfriend, but he knew what I was doing, even though I didn't admit it. He caught me a couple times, but it was a pretty horrible situation. And he had no problem finding a good job, but he would never keep a job. He would always find a reason to quit or get fired. So I was stuck supporting him. So therefore, I justified me seeing the clients. I was like, oh, I need to make more money. And he's not working, so I'm paying his bills. Like, whatever. I had no respect for him. I know it was wrong. So I would see my clients outside of work. And one day he tried to kill me. And that whole story is in the book, but it was really scary.
Yeah, he tried to kill you, and this is one of the parts in the book where I'm just screaming in my head, going, "No, get away!" Because even one of your coworkers saw the signs, the way that he was acting before you went home. She's like, "Please, please don't go. I feel like he's gonna hurt you." You went anyway because you also, throughout the book, it seems like you always have the you see the best in people. You have the best of intentions, and you're like, "Oh no, they just." You know, you're making excuses for them and you're wanting them to be good people, and they always end up disappointing you. That's also kind of a theme throughout the book. And so he literally pulls a knife on you, and somehow you get away. You call the cops, you have to go back there. He steals your car, and just everything that ensues is so wild. And then at the end, he has the audacity to try and flip things on you and make it seem like you were the one who got someone to beat him up, but he fell out a window. Like there's so much to that story. And I'm just going, get away from him, Naomi. So what happens after that, after all of that chaos, and he's trying to kind of get you back into his life?
So he always had this way, and like you said, I always tried to see the best in everyone. And he always had this way of making me feel bad. Like no one else would ever want me. Like, I am the best choice, the best boyfriend that he's the best one that I could ever have. Like, I'm lucky to have him. And he had me so brainwashed and like mentally abused me so much that I somehow believed that. And eventually I went back because I was like, I don't want to be alone the rest of my life and nobody will ever want me. Like, that felt really horrible. So I ended up going back and I was there for another year and a half to 2 years, and I ended up buying a house in Vegas. And one morning I was taking a shower and it just hit me. I was like, because I tried to break up with him like numerous times, but he never believed me or never moved out. He would just always stay there and he wasn't working. He didn't have money. But that morning it hit me and I was like, I am done. I don't care. Call someone who cares because I do not care. His car that I bought wasn't working. He's like, I don't even have a car. And I was like, I don't care. Get out. Like, you get out. And he tried to be so nice and like the nicest guy you could ever, just like always. And that time I stuck to my guns. I was like, I'm done. And he just wasn't leaving. And I finally, I was like, you have a week. You have to leave. Like, you have to go. I don't care where you go. You have to go. And he ended up leaving, but he left his stuff there and he kept threatening me. And just, it was awful. But eventually I had enough and I made him come get his stuff because I was like, I can't have this. And I changed my phone numbers and he was mad because my phone number was under his name. So like he had a contract and I was like, I don't care. That's not my problem. I'm done. I got a new phone. I was like, here's my phone. Like, take it. I'm done. And it was so amazing, like the feeling to realize, but I always felt like I had to look over my shoulders because of the threats that he made. Like, he claimed that he was going to hire his thug friends to come beat me up and to be outside my home waiting for me when I got home. So I always was kind of paranoid, if you will, or worried that someone might hurt me because of him, even after I like cut all ties with him. And when I moved to California, that's when I was like, oh, finally I can be free and live a better life and not have to look over my shoulder because of him.
Yeah. Well, and also before we get to the California thing, the threats and everything were actually a very real thing for you in your life because you had been followed home at one point from the club and were held at gunpoint. I mean, you knew what that felt like. So of course, you're going to have a different perspective when he's starting to threaten you to do the same type of thing. And that must have just been so terrifying.
It was very terrifying. And I didn't even feel safe to go to my house. Like, I often stayed the night at my dancer friend's house because I was scared that he was going to come and break in or hurt me, or someone was outside my door. Like he said, was going to beat me up and break every bone in my body. That's what he would say all the time.
Wow.
And my girlfriend's like, he's just trying to scare you. Yeah, but I don't know what he's capable of doing because he's crazy. He tried to kill me one time.
So how did you get to California then? Let's talk about this guy.
So this guy I had met at Cheetah's when I was dancing. And it was very brief, but our eyes met and it was like this connection, like it just pulled us together. Like, it was strange. And he only had a little bit of time because he had to get on a plane and go back home, but we exchanged emails. And we emailed each other a couple times throughout those years. But 2.5 years later, after I initially met him, was like 6 months after I broke up with the guy in Vegas. And he texts me and he says, I'll be in Vegas. And it was a week before my birthday, but I was messed up that week because a guy I was kind of seeing was, we were doing coke and gambling. We were just up for like 10 days with very little sleep. So I had a black eye because I fell in the elevator because I fell asleep. And when it stopped, I fell and bumped my eye. So I didn't want this guy to see me like that. And I was like, oh, I don't feel good. And I didn't feel good because I hadn't slept. And he's like, I'll be back next week, which was my birthday. He's like, oh, we can get together then. And it was like magic. It was amazing. He was so cool. And he flew me to California to go see him. And then I started driving there and I would spend like 2 weeks there. And we would go to underground parties and festivals. And he was a DJ and an engineer, and he was super into music and parties and stuff. And it was a whole new perspective and fun life that I'd never experienced before. So I would go back to Vegas for a couple of weeks and work. And I wasn't making that much money at the club because it was hard for me to focus. I just wanted to be in California with him. So, but I would see clients. And that was like a huge mistake I made. I didn't tell this guy in California that I was doing that. I wanted to so bad to tell him because I wanted to have an honest relationship. But selfish me worried that he would leave me. And I was so in love with him. And I know it was wrong. I should have told him. But that was in the middle of 2011. By the end of 2011, I decided to move there. We decided it was better for me to move in with him. And then I decided that I wanted to change my life. I didn't want to dance anymore. I didn't want to be a prostitute. I didn't want to see my clients in Vegas. I decided to go to college, Kaplan College. And I started looking into it. It was a one-year program. I could get my medical assistant license, an x-ray technician license, all in 1 year. And I was like, what's a year of my life? I can do this. And I did. And I would go like every 3 to 4 months, I would go for a weekend to Vegas. And I would make enough money in the weekend to support myself because I had very little bills. And after a year, right out of college, I got a job as a phlebotomist. And I did that for 3 years. But it was over an hour drive and it almost killed me. It was horrible. I hated it. I felt so tied down. I was so proud of myself because I had such an accomplishment. And I thought all the dancing and stuff was behind me. But unfortunately, I couldn't make a lot of money. I was only making $11 an hour. And in California, that's not a lot. So I would have to go to Vegas every couple of months to be able to pay my bills. My student loans started coming in and I had to start paying for those. So I would still go to Vegas. And again, I didn't tell my ex that I was seeing the clients. I would just see as many as I could to make as much money because I hated doing it, but I had to do what I had to do. And I didn't want him to support me. I wanted to support myself. So I would justify it. It was horrible, but we had so much fun. We went to lots of festivals and he was an interesting man. He loves women. And I told him when we first started dating that I didn't want to have multiple partners. I didn't want to be polyamorous. And he didn't say anything, but I'm sure that he hurt me. And before I knew it, it seemed that that was all our life consisted of, was he always was like, honey, I want to have sex with other women. And we'd go out and he would just flirt with them. And it was really hard, but I grew a lot through that relationship. That was probably the most growth I've had since I left the Amish, because it was a whole new world that I had no idea about. And I was like, maybe I'm the one missing out. Maybe my views are wrong. Like, I came from the Amish. Like, maybe I'm the one that's closed-minded. I don't know. So I tried to be open-minded, but it was a lot to deal with.
That's the hard thing, too. When you grow up a certain way, you don't know what baseline is in the outside world or how other people do it. What's normal? Is it normal to be in a relationship, a polyamorous relationship? And I also wanted to point out that from what I was understanding within your book, it seemed like it wasn't even necessarily polyamory. It felt just more like he just wanted an excuse to sleep with other women, because I've had friends who are polyamorous. I've known about the community and it's very respectful. There's boundaries put in place. Everyone is very clear if they want to introduce a new partner into the relationship. Sometimes they have separate relationships. Like, I'm going to have 3 girlfriends. You can have your 3 boyfriends. We never actually interact together. There's lots of rules and consent, I think, is the biggest thing. And what I was noticing in your book is it was kind of forced on you, where you would be at a sex party and he's like, well, have sex with her. And he would just offer you to somebody. And you're like, I don't want to do that. And then because you would do that, he would go, okay, now I can go have sex with someone else. It was very manipulative and coercive and conniving. And so I just wanted to put it out there for those who may be in the polyamorous community to know that I know that there is a difference. And I think that he was maybe using that and using your lack of understanding about the outside world to kind of manipulate you and to put you down and to put you in these situations that you didn't want to be in.
There's definitely, I agree with that. And there are definitely a lot of rules and consent and boundaries in polyamory. And he definitely did not follow that. So that, I feel, was the hardest part because he didn't follow those.
Right. And I know it was kind of a hard time in your life, too, because you're grappling with your decisions and how you're making money. And there just seemed to be a lot of tension there in that relationship. And that's when you were introduced to his friend. And it seemed like for the first time, like, okay, this feels different. Out of all the guys that she's ever met, it seems like this guy really cares for her. And you started off as friends, which is also really beautiful. And spoiler alert, that's who you're with now, right? So yes, yay, it worked out. And I'm like, oh, I could take a deep breath for her. I feel like she found someone who truly loves and respects her. And it was just so beautiful to see that relationship unfold towards the end of your book.
Thank you. That was definitely amazing. When I met Waylon, there was nothing sexually about it. Like, I didn't even find him, no offense, like, I didn't think he was my type or anything, but I was just so happy to just have such an amazing friend in my life finally. Like, finally, when my ex went to go hit on girls and do what he did, I had someone that was nice to me, and we just talked about life. It was wonderful.
Yeah, there's a line that I wrote down from your book that I wanted to read because it was very powerful, and I don't even know if you meant it to be, but it said, "His lack of judgment allowed me to settle into the safety of being myself." And I feel like that just summed up your book so beautifully, because you're going from one bad situation to another, to another, to another, these abusive relationships. You don't really feel safe within yourself. Sometimes you're using your body as an empowerment thing. Sometimes your body is being used or just tossed around by all these other men around you. And so when you find him, he's allowing you to be you in whichever way you want to express your sexuality. If you want to keep dancing, if you want to do these certain things while also saying, I love you and I'm here for you. And I think from my perspective, it seems like that is the safety that allowed you to really settle into yourself and be the woman who you really wanted to be. And you've mentioned off camera, you finally found that freedom that you were looking for the day you left the Amish. It was so liberating just because you had that safety and someone who loved you for you. It's just really beautiful.
Thank you. It's definitely was... Like, I always felt like there was a light at the end. Like, throughout all these dark days, I always had hope that I would someday find the freedom that I was searching for and have the peace that I would love to have. And definitely when I met him and we ran away together and I was able to be myself, I definitely feel at peace. And like, I found the freedom that I went searching for when I left the Amish. Absolutely. And it's amazing. Liberating, for sure.
And how many years later was that? 25, 30 years later?
So 26 years ago. So 20 years. That was 20 years later. Literally 20 years later. Yep.
Wow.
20 years. But I never gave up. I always had hope that one day. And even though there were lots of dark days, and I always tried to make the most out of every situation. And we said earlier, I tried to see the good in everyone, even though I shouldn't have so much sometimes. But I don't know. I tried to be a positive person throughout my life. I think I'm pretty positive for the most part.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, with having that as part of your personality of wanting to see the best in people. I think that's a really beautiful thing to have. I think it would have been helpful if you had more of an understanding of the outside world so that you knew when you were being taken advantage of. You kind of had to learn that the hard way, but it's still really beautiful that you were willing to always see the best in people and you wanted to find the positive. I don't think anything's wrong with that. So, wow, you're doing great now and you have a little girl, a daughter. So happy for you there. And is there anything that you want to share about how you're doing your peace side, your consciousness side?
I think that I just hope that my story can inspire and give hope to others, because there can always be light if you choose to see it, and you have always have the choice to change your life at any time you want to. And just don't give up. And I hope that my story can inspire and give hope to other people, because I never gave up and I am very happy and my life is great now.
That's so awesome. And if you could give any advice to someone who maybe they just left the Amish, or they stumbled on this and they're considering leaving the Amish, is there anything that you would tell them as far as if you're going to get out, do X, Y, or Z?
Yes. So I think that because of the lack of education and the talk about sex and drugs and things, I feel like anyone that's just leaving needs to, I don't know if they need to have their guard up, but they just need to be aware that things aren't always as they seem, and that people, even though they might seem like they have the best intentions for you, they don't always, and you just have to be strong and just move forward and just, I don't know, ask for help if you need help. And there are people that are out here that can help us and make the transition easier. But I was very naive, and I don't know, and when I was younger, and I'm still stubborn, but I don't know, I had a hard time asking for help sometimes, and or I didn't know where to turn to. And just not giving up definitely always helped me keep going, kept me going.
I think that's great advice. The awareness is key, and that's what we talk about all the time. That's the consciousness side. Be very conscious of what's going on around you. Be aware. See if anyone is still trying to control or manipulate you, because it's so easy to fall back into those situations, not because you want to, but maybe because it's familiar, because you're used to being controlled and told what to do. And sometimes you don't even realize you're being controlled. So that awareness is key, making sure you're surrounding yourself with people who really do want the best for you and have the best of intentions. So this has been amazing, Naomi. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
And sharing and being so vulnerable and open. Everyone go read her book. It is The Amazing Adventures of an Amish Stripper, an erotic memoir, highlighting on the erotic part. You have been warned or challenged. It was a fun read. I highly recommend it. And if you want to follow her over on Instagram and TikTok, it's Amish Inspiration. We'll put the links in the description. And your Linda Listen moment. Do you have a sassy statement, as a viral video with a toddler goes, or any sort of inspiration for our viewers?
Wow. The inspiration for the viewers, actually, just keep going, keep your head up, and like, you can make your life the way you want it. You just have to choose to do the right thing. And if I can do it, anyone can do it. Like, I've been down there low and I climbed back up, and life is good.
Yeah.
And you too can do that.
Yeah. And we didn't even mention your sobriety. You've been sober for a while now, and I just want to congratulate you on that.
Thank you. Yes, it's nice to be sober. Life is much better being sober. So it's amazing.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again. Do you have any other final thoughts before we go?
I would just like to say that my Amish family, like, I love my parents and I have a pretty good relationship with them now, and a better relationship with them than I did when I was there. And I'm grateful that they still accept me and my daughter into their life. Like, that's truly a blessing to still be a part of their family, even though they're Amish and I'm not. So
yeah,
that makes me happy.
I'm really glad that you followed up with that, because I'm sure people are going to want to know. There was a really beautiful scene in your book where your dad is bouncing your baby and playing with her, and your mom's playing with her. I'm like, oh, that's so sweet that you were able to still have that connection with them.
Yeah.
That's really amazing.
Thank you. I go visit them once a year, and I bring her, and they just love her, and they love when we come visit.
Aww.
So it's amazing.
All right. Well, guys, definitely check out her book. Go follow her on Instagram and TikTok if you want to see more of those videos. And if you want to support the podcast, leaving those very kind comments are always helpful and so inspirational for us and for our guests. Help boost the algorithm. liking, subscribing, all the YouTube-y things. If you want to support the podcast even more, you can get some of our merch at cultstoconsciousness.com under the merch tab. You can become a patron at patreon.com/cultstoconsciousness. You can come to Costa Rica with us if you just want to hang out and do something fun and adventurous together. And if you like this video, I will leave two more down here below that you can check out. And until next time, follow your highest excitement, be conscious, and be well. Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, it would mean a lot if you could like and subscribe on YouTube and leave a review or a comment to help with our visibility. You can also find me on social media at cults2consciousness or reach out by email at cults2consciousness@gmail.com.